Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of ApforCast. Today is August 1st, and it's my first ApforCast following TED Global 2009. It was really exciting, really glad I was selected to be a fellow, and really looking forward to seeing what comes of it. It was a great experience. The TED community is really fantastic. It was great to be able to share some of my ideas with people who have the influence in the industry to either help or point me in a direction that might be more productive or towards people who may be able to help. Now, if you'd like to know what it's like to be a TED fellow, it's exhausting. From the time that I got to Oxford to the time that I left, it was extremely, extremely jam-packed with just stuff to do. You're constantly meeting people. You're constantly, it's great practice for your elevator pitch, for whatever it is that you might be working on, because, you know, you're literally meeting, maybe hundreds of people per day, maybe not that many, maybe 100 people per day. But, still, that's good practice, and it's really good, networking. Other than that, to contrast it, it's really laid back. They really make you feel comfortable preparing your presentation. We had a great, sort of crash course on what not to do with PowerPoint from the author of the books, Slideology. I can't remember her last name, but her first name is Barbara. And, that type of stuff, that type of personal development stuff was really cool. As far as the actual talk itself is concerned, it was really fantastic. It was really good experience. It's really easy to overwork yourself and get a little nervous. I know I did. I'm sure some of the other fellows did, just because you've got this image of like whatever your favorite talk is, and you're like, oh my God, I'm trying to give a talk that's insightful as, you know, Malcolm Gladwell or, you know, Jacqueline Novogratz or just whoever. It's incredibly stressful. But the good thing is you're among nothing but friends, and everyone wants to hear what you have to say. So that was really encouraging. I had the opportunity to give two talks. I don't know if either of them will make the web. It's up to the TED.com editor. But, you know, regardless, it was still really good practice to get those things, to get the opportunity to do those things in front of such a large audience. So I'm really grateful to the TED community. There was some really cool, you know, gifts and stuff. I think you'll be seeing more ApforCasts accompanied by video as a result of one of the cool items I picked up in Oxford. It was a flip cam, that was provided by, one of the TED Fellow sponsors. So I'm just, enthusiastic that I had the opportunity to go. I feel like it was only yesterday that I was sitting here talking about going in the last ApforCast, but that's been a month now, so time has really flown, and it's hard to believe that it's already come and gone. If you don't know, TED India is coming up. I believe it's November 3rd through the 7th or something like that. And I think I'm going to try to go. A bunch of the other fellows are trying to go as well, so I think I would really like to experience TED again. It was really just fantastic. So I want to, so real quick, this is going to be a short ApforCast, just because there's a lot going on. I want to get some new shows done as well. The next couple are going to feature some of my fellows, who I'll be interviewing via Skype or phone. However I can figure that out, that's what the next couple of shows will be. But in the meantime, here in Kampala, we had a friend drop in, You may know him pretty well already. His name's Teddy Ruge. He runs the website projectdiaspora.org, which is one of my favorite reads, and it's got a really fantastic community built around it, really fantastic vibe. So I just wanted to catch up with him while he was here and give him some time to talk about some of the things they're working on. And that is essentially going to be the show. So I want to thank you all for listening, and look forward to some new shows soon.
So I'm here with Teddy Ruge, who is back in Kampala, and we've just been catching up, and he just took a tour of Africa Labs, and I wanted to follow up and see how things were going at Project Diaspora and some of his other projects. So,
as John, I said, it's me, Teddy, Yeah, so I had a great time following you, talking to your guys at Africa Labs, and really encouraging project that you guys are having. So I'm really just here for about the next 5 weeks or so to work with some farmers up in Masindi District, trying to commercialize a lot of their plants that they're able to plant in their gardens, and which will provide them a bit of income.
Right. So is this a new project, or does it fit into some of the stuff you've been doing before?
I think it really fits into the Project Diaspora mission, in that we want to use, we kind of as the project to exemplify what the diaspora can do, not necessarily because you have an expertise in that, but because you have the connections to that. Now, I'm not, you know, an agriculture expert, but I can certainly look through my address book and see who can help these farmers.
Right, right.
And the way this started, really, Project UMPG started when I came to Uganda a couple of years ago, and I was walking through my mother's garden, and she had planted these things that looked like pineapple, but weren't. It was my first experience with this, and I asked her, really, what is this? And she said, it's aloe vera. Mm-hmm. And really, that's kind of, you know, digging deeper into that, kind of escalated in that there were hundreds of farmers in Masindi District who had planted aloe vera and didn't have a market for it, didn't have processing facilities, didn't have buyers, but they had invested, you know, their land, their time, and capital into this product, but didn't have a way to commercialize it or to benefit from it. So I started digging around and found some aloe vera experts, you know, taught myself about it and contacted them. And then from then on, the more I worked with the farmers, found out they have tons of other readily commercial products that they could benefit from. So looked to finding the easiest one that we could get to market first so we can get some income for the farmers. And that turned out to be Moringa. Which you know is an amazing plant that you can use, you know, any part of the tree as a commercial product in itself.
Is it is Moringa indigenous to Uganda? Is it or exclusive to the region? Or
well, it's I wouldn't say it's exclusive to the region because I think you find it in the tropical belt all over the world.
Okay.
I think most probably it was brought here by Indians.
Okay.
And the good thing about it, really, it's drought resistant, and you can harvest about 3 times a year, which is, you know, income for the farmers, and it's very lucrative actually for farmers who can get it, who can get a good cash crop in on it. So that's why I thought it would be really a good way to help the farmers gain some income and a little bit of economic independence.
Interesting. So I actually had someone who came by the office the other day who was more of a lawyer who dealt with property rights in sub-Saharan Africa, and I'm just curious if any of the people you've worked with have had like land disputes, and is this like a growing thing that you know people should be wary of? Is how to protect the land of these farmers who may not know their rights, may not know how to protect their property.
Right. I think that's a very valid concern because a lot of these farmers have lived on their land. I mean, it's been passed on for generations and they've been on it for forever. So in terms of protection and getting legal documents for this land, they probably don't have any information or know how to obtain that information. They're kind of grandfathered into ownership, really, but don't have really a late legal status to the land. So I anticipate we'll see some problems arise in the future, especially when some of these farmers start to make real money off
right.
of their crops and start to expand their acreage in order to become a lot more profitable. I anticipate a lot of that happening, where someone will come in and say, well, you're planting on my property, and really, you know, even though you've been there for 50, 60 years, it's really
right.
my property. So I see a lot of that coming in the near future. It's not something we're readily ready to deal with right now.
Right, right.
But I think in the course of development and as we get more and more farmers signed up, I think that's something we need to formalize and attempt to assist those farmers to legalize their ownership. And hopefully we'll find a kinship in the land office that will help us deal with this. But, you know, then again, TIA. I foresee that as being a headache that we will have to deal with. But that is a very important topic not to ignore in the coming months.
Yeah, I'll put you in touch with that woman just because I think it's something that I had never really thought about.
Right.
It seems to be a big issue, growing issue.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I think the farmers will appreciate that.
So I know Project Diaspora has many other projects. Can you talk about some of the other ones that you're working on?
The other project specific to Uganda that we're working on is Women of Jerika, which is another, self-empowerment project we started when we last year. It's a group of women working not too far from Kampala, center of Kampala, in a stone quarry. That we encountered them, and we raised a little bit of money to see if we could create a project for them, for skills building project. And we're actually going to be meeting with them in August to kind of sit down with their the group leader and NGO, and figure out a best way forward to getting them from those mines and into something skillful. They had wanted previously to be seamstresses, so we're looking into a program to train them how to use those skills to be more economically viable and independent in this very tough economic environment in Kampala.
And through your interactions with people like the women of Chirika and farmers and stuff, are people feeling the economic crisis at all here? Or
here in Uganda specifically?
Well, for instance, one of my staff members the other day, you know, they were talking about how prices had gone up, and you know, they were essentially feeling inflation is what she
right.
was describing.
Yeah.
You know, the shilling, the Ugandan shilling doesn't go as far as it used to. And,
well, I can I can certainly, I don't need those two groups to tell me.
Right.
I mean, just the difference of when I was here in December to now, July, August, I've seen a change in the cost of transportation.
Mm-hmm.
From the two locations that I travel to the most, I've seen a change in the cost of just a soda, just in the time that I've been gone, those 6 months that
wow.
I've been gone, I've seen a very dramatic change in the cost of things. So I can imagine it's kind of hitting everybody
right.
Here on the ground. So I can only imagine how the women of Jerika are faring, considering they were really making just barely over a dollar a day.
Right.
So if, you know, things are costing 20-30% more, I can imagine they definitely are feeling the pinch.
And so before we were sort of talking about craftsmanship and, you know, using skills to make things,
mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you had any thoughts on websites like Etsy and that type of thing that –
essentially, like, since you live in the West and you can create, like, an account and you can sort of be the liaison between these small groups making products here, mm-hmm. and then sort of give them an outlet to the world to sell,
mm-hmm.
I was just wondering if you had experience, had any thoughts on sites like that or that particular site.
I think that is a fantastic outlet. As a matter of fact, last week I interviewed a Ugandan diasporan living in the UK who's basically making kind of took up the same model where she came back, saw an opportunity for these women to have an external market.
Right.
So she acted as a liaison in the UK
right.
area. She put up a website and sells these handmade products from women in Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania, I believe, and Madagascar.
Interesting.
And you know, just in talking to her, you know, she saw the huge economic impact that it gave these women having an opportunity to external markets, because then you're giving them an opportunity to make a lot more money.
Right.
From their products than they would here in the local market, because I think the price constraints here are very limited, because not everybody has the cash for you to charge very high. So for your labor, you're getting very little return.
Right.
Whereas if you're selling to the West, you're getting a lot more return.
Right.
But I think the gap is that connection.
Right.
Finding somebody who will actually represent their products in the market, somebody
right.
that will create a conduit for them to export their products to. And you know, and also I think the lack of organization for most of these people, because a lot of them are artisans that work individually. So I think they would benefit from working as groups into a corporation of men, so that way they're able to expand capacity and be able to serve the needs of the West.
And then real quick, I was just reading, like, your background the other day, and I had no idea that you were an Olympic athlete.
Well, I would say I had an
Olympic contender.
I was definitely an Olympic contender, and I got very close to going. My passion really had been to represent Uganda in the Olympics. A little bit about that, I got a scholarship to go to the University of North Texas as a hurdler. I quickly got bored with the hurdling because it was only a single sport, and I really wanted more of a challenge. So immediately coach transferred me over to the decathlon, and I loved it immediately. Mastered the pole vault, which I think was the most difficult part, and broke the school record in the first year, and then after that I thought, hey, let me see how far I can take this.
Wow.
And whether or not I can get to Olympic level, maybe, represent Uganda. And pretty soon, I did that for about 4 years after graduation, and
wow.
I broke the Ugandan record in pole vault, high jump, and decathlon,
wow.
Which still stands. But I felt just slightly short of going to the Olympics, but I was very happy with how far I got.
Did you fall short for like a competitive reason, or was it like some sort of technicality? Or
it was, I think, a combination of a lot of things. Because, not to blame anyone, but it wasn't really a priority to support me here
right,
from
right.
a governmental standpoint or from the athletic department standpoint. So a lot of the things that I was doing on my own. So it
right.
was really a shortfall on support.
Right. Right.
Because it cost a lot.
Yeah.
To really travel all over the world competing and trying to
right.
earn a spot. So, but I was happy, being the unofficial athletic ambassador for Uganda for then, yeah.
Did they send anyone in your place, or?
No, I was actually the only Ugandan decathlete.
That's crazy. It's crazy that you couldn't find support.
I think we've only had about two decathletes in the last 30, 40 years in Uganda. So, I thought it was quite unique, but, there wasn't really a place for a decathlete in the sport, because really what you have is runners.
Right.
It's long distance or
right.
really.
Yeah,
just long distance. So they, I don't think they knew what to do with somebody with 10 sports.
Right, right.
You know? So, you know, you have 10 sports and the farthest you run is a mile. I mean, right. Come on. What challenge is that? So, no. And I was not willing to run the 2-3 miles or the marathon. So, no.
You were just listening to Teddy Ruge, one of the co-founders of ProjectDiaspora.org. It was really exciting to have him come check out Africa Labs. He's someone who, I met him very early on before we even really had anything going here. And it's really exciting to see some of these people who've helped to nurture the idea and support me, see that it's actually coming to fruition, or at least it's gotten somewhere. Hopefully we can keep it going. Anyway, more on that later. But it's really exciting to just have people come to Uganda and see the type of stuff that we're doing. So that wraps up the latest edition of AfriCast. I hope to get a couple of more real soon. And now that I am not supposed to announce this for another couple of days, but less people listen to the podcast than read the blog, so I think I feel a little bit more comfortable saying this here. Africa, the blog, has just hired its first staff member, and the reason why is because, you know, I have a huge passion for journalism, and, you know, my vision for the blog is that one day it becomes sustainable, and I'm not going to give up on that. I'm not going to give up on the incubation. I'm just going for it, on both sides. So, you know, anyway, I met Teresa a long time ago through Twitter, Teresa Carpenter, who lives in Benin. And I am really excited to have her on board. You've probably noticed a lot of posts from her, a lot of stuff changing on the blog. She's behind that, and she's really helping me out. So I'm really I just want to thank her. Having her on board gives me more time to do stuff like this, the Fricka Factoid, and to focus on the incubator side of the company. So, none of the stuff that I'm doing would be possible without, you know, every little cog has its place, and she jumped into the middle of it, of everything, and is now one of the biggest cogs. So I'm really happy to have her on board, and I just want to thank her, as much as I can. I'm going to try to get her on the show. We will announce some more stuff later on in the month, but, if you're a podcast listener, keep this a secret between you and me until we announce it on the blog. Thanks.